Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a podcast hosted by investor, speaker, and award-winning author, Natalie Torres Haddad. Natalie will share the tips and tricks of money management, as well as the story of self-made millionaires who have attained financial freedom.
Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes. I'm here with the one and only Patrick Grace, owner of many, many businesses, but his expertise lies on real estate, growing up in Hawaii and now living in Kansas City. You can get all his information on the website. Pat, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
The first question that we wanted to ask you is, what was that one check that changed your thinking about no longer working from a 9-to-5? Do you remember how much that was, or cash?
Yeah, it was, okay, so it was a $9,000 check. And the story behind it was that it was my first rehab property that I actually purchased, rehabbed, and flipped. And it took me almost 9 months. My six-month loan expired. I had to renew. I was playing football. I tore my ACL. The first $15,000 I paid to the contractor, I never seen him again. I mean, there was so many things that went wrong with this deal. And I was still working 9-to-5. I had... my wife was working. We were still working at Olive Garden on the weekends, and I was flipping this house, and I screwed everything up, made tons of mistakes, and I sold the house and made $9,000 even after all that crap, you know. And I was like, man, if I was to just focus on this and actually, you know, 100% laser focused on it, I would just kill it. I knew I would.
So wow, $9,000. So how much would that have, how much would you've had to work on your regular day jobs in order to make those $9,000?
Right. So that's the thing, is I was making, you know, I had a degree in sociology and criminal justice. I was doing juvenile probation and parole, and I was bringing home maybe $2,000 a month. You know? So for me to make $9,000 on a W-2 job would have took me, I don't know, 4 months, 5 months.
And what came with that for you as far as, okay, you're switching over to, okay, working on rehabs. And like you said, you did a lot of mistakes, but what changed from you as far as doing obviously the 9-to-5 at the time, but you didn't have previous experience in real estate. What made you feel you would be good at this?
I've always been good at surrounding myself with smart people and good people. Like, I might not be the smartest guy, but I can go find that guy and at least sell him on being on my team. So that's kind of what I did with real estate. I just got around some pretty good guys and some guys with some money. And, you know, I just started creating rehab teams and real estate teams and property management teams, and just started growing these ancillary companies, as the investors would come through, you know. So this whole thing started with me and my wife just doing everything by ourselves, you know, for ourselves.
Oh, and for those that probably heard these little steps in the background, that was his wife walking through. So they're definitely we're going to have to interview her as well. But yeah, you're right. It was something that you started from your home and grown to how many employees now?
Oh, man, we'll kick out over 500 1099s this year.
Wow.
So maybe not employees, but they're catching income, they're raising families, they're paying bills with money that we're paying them.
Right. Know? And you come from a humble beginning. It wasn't something like you obviously learned from generations prior. Can you, for someone that's listening, can you tell them what was your feelings around money as a kid? What makes you who you are now today?
So it was probably my mom. She was real, she's real, you know, just strict, and we didn't have a lot of money. We came from Pearl City, Hawaii. I mean, we're in the middle of the island. You know, not poor, but not, you know, it wasn't rich. But she was just real strict with money. She would pay me an allowance, and if I was out of money by Wednesday, I had to wait till the next week, like, you know, no matter what. So yeah. I feel like I've learned how to budget and be real good with money just from growing up. And, you know, I mean, that was back in the day, you get $20 a week.
And your parents didn't have a business, right? They worked for other people.
Right. Yeah. My mom was a nurse. My dad was a fisherman.
And for you, so entrepreneurship, how did that fall into place for you? For someone that's listening that might be thinking about going that right,
Man, I'm just, you know, I had a couple jobs and I just figured out, you know what, this, you know, people telling you what to do and I got all these ideas and you can't really implement anything because all this red tape or you're the new guy or, you know, higher people have better ideas than you. So I figured, you know what, if I just work on my own companies and I just start my own stuff, you know, and it was probably luck too. I mean, you think about when I started was 2000, right? So, we've always been blessed. Like, I believe in like karma and some sort of, you know, God's just looking out that we've always been super blessed with timing, with decisions. When I look back, like sometimes I'm just amazed, like we didn't know the crash was coming,
right?
Real estate crash. At that time we had 100 properties and in 2007 of February, I sell maybe 90 of them. You know, so, and then Lehman Brothers goes out of business in August, right? So you want to talk about liquidation on a bubble. I mean, it happened.
And you were exposed to different cycles. You just said you were part of the crash. You were there before the crash. Obviously, you now sustain a huge business now well into 2018. What would you have told yourself maybe right during that crash when you were just starting out in your business?
Oh, well, that's always the best time to start, right? So when everybody's running away, you need to be running in. So while everybody was losing their homes, the smart money was buying them, you know? So I was fortunate enough to be a part of that and capture some really great deals, you know, back in 2007 and 8, that I still own today, you know? So these assets are providing passive income. I mean, no matter if I sleep all day, if I travel, if I work every day, whatever happens, my rental portfolio will always generate money no matter what, right?
Wow.
No matter what, I don't have to really work and I can generate that income through rents. So that's a big important factor. And then, cause all the other businesses I own, I mean, we have to be there to work them. If I don't show up from my real estate company, it won't make money. If I don't show up from my construction company, it won't make money. But the rentals, you don't really have to show up, you know?
And that's the idea that most people want to have some kind of passive income that they don't have to work at, like you just said, a day-to-day thing. For you, do you ever feel, you know, obviously there's always hurdles or clients or tenants that are headaches that you deal with, but do you think it's worth it? And if so, is there ever a time where you're like, I want to quit?
No. So, I mean, right now, the big stressor for me right now is not really managing the day-to-day tenants. It's more like managing six or seven companies and employees and issues with employees and the IRS and, you know, big stuff like that. But I mean, I know my employees who deal with the tenants every day. I mean, you know, they cry sometimes. It can get stressful. And, you know, it's hard being, especially in the property management business, because you have so many customers. Like, your client is the owner, your client is the tenant, you know, so you've got to work kind of both angles and you got to kind of be that middle person that just gets yelled at from both sides. So it can get pretty frustrating. But in the grand scheme of what we're doing, the property management is probably the most important company, right? That's the company that manages all the assets. And when you have, you know, we got 800 homes in that management company. So every month there's 30, 40 people moving out. You know, we got to get those homes ready so my construction company can handle all those jobs, maintenance, you know. So it was just me sitting down figuring out, I'm giving away all this money and I'm giving away all this work to other people. So that's when I said, you know what, I need to start my own construction business, hire my own people and keep everything in-house.
And you just said it. So I've seen your company grow in this past 20 years. I've seen you from the beginning and to see it's amazing where you are today. For someone that's starting out, I'm sure it was probably even overwhelming to think about running one employee and dealing with the day-to-day. Do you have a staff under you? Do you have like a personal assistant or someone that's thinking, how would I even get to that point?
Yeah, so here's the hardest thing, and one of the faster you learn this, the easier your life will get. But when you start from nothing and you start by yourself in your house or whatever, the biggest problem you're gonna run into is delegation. You're going to be scared to let somebody in on what you created and what.
Yes.
And so for me and my wife, the biggest thing was like our first two or three hires because, you know, we're relinquishing stuff to for them to do. And we don't know if it's going to get done right. So after three or four hires of assistants and processors and transaction coordinators, people to help us with paperwork and transactions, it gets smoother, you know. And then, so now after 20 years, it's almost like, if you're not making mistakes in your first month of working, you're probably not working hard enough. I'd rather deal with the person that makes mistakes with action than makes mistakes with no action.
Right, because that's how you learn, right? More than anything. For you, obviously, you're constantly learning new ways to perfect your business. Can you look back and say, okay, there is a certain habits that you do every single day? Is there any that you can give to the listeners that you feel have really helped you be successful at this point?
Well, usually I start my day, like most people will start their day checking emails and voicemails, right? And I don't really do that. For me, the first thing I like doing is maybe selling some deals, buying something online, writing maybe four or five offers to buy some houses. But actually, like, instead of starting my day being reactive, checking emails and voicemails is almost reacting to things instead of being,
right.
I'd rather start my day being kind of proactive on something and buying something or selling something or, you know, and then later on I can start with the reactive stuff. Now I got to fix people's problems and answer to this person and fit, you know, I mean, and that's what, so I never really start my day being reactive. Always trying to be proactive.
And you're right. Maybe most people do start that way where they're all of a sudden their whole day is shot too. And they probably wasted their time on social media, Facebook, or anything else that's probably not as helpful.
Yeah. And then for me, I mean, I get 300 emails a day. If I start firing off emails in the morning, I'll play the email game all day. You know, they'll send it back to me. I send it back to them. They send, you know, so
right.
For me, I like checking emails at 6, 7 o'clock when they can't send
in
it
the
back
afternoon
to me.
When they can't. And that's smart. And I don't know if you ever read that book. And that's so smart because there's that book called The 4-Hour Work Week where he says, I believe it's Tim Ferriss says, don't check your emails if you are only twice a day at the most and do it from 11 to 4. So the fact that you're doing it at the end of the day, you say, here it is, you want the answer, and I'm sure you're straightforward. You've always been a straightforward person. Those are some great tips because I know people are trying to figure out, okay, what's my next move? For someone that's thinking about buying their first home or their first rental property, what advice would you give them that you probably would have given yourself back then, especially obviously knowing you said your first one, you made tons of mistakes. What advice would you have given that person that's starting out?
Just probably interview and don't be afraid to ask personal questions when, you know, you're dealing with people like, if you're investing out of state or, you know, almost I'd say 95% of my clients do not live in Missouri, right? They live in Australia, Canada, New York, Hawaii, all over. So when I'm dealing with their portfolios and their issues, they should interview, ask the person, like, how many properties do you own? Can I see an income and expense report from your portfolio? You know, when you're dealing with contractors, ask them, for their last three jobs and when the jobs were. I mean, if you have a 2-month gap in employment where you don't have no work, that's probably not a good guy to be working with, you know. So realtors, asking them how many investor, you know, clients do they have, asking them for underwriting formulas to see if they know what, you know, I mean, there's certain things that investor realtors would know that most realtors won't know because.
And that's key. And I think those are the biggest things, those biggest questions that you feel like you're imposing on them or you're asking, oh, is this too personal? But you just said, well, that you're trusting them to go with you with your company. You should be able to trust that person that's giving you this information. So that's pretty helpful. Is there any books or shows or something that you feel have helped your education along the way? Because, I mean, that's something that you have to constantly deal with. Cycles are always changing. What is it that you do?
Probably when I look back, like when I was 20, you know, that whole Rich Dad, Poor Dad series was out and he was from Hawaii. So, I mean, I kind of jumped on that train and that was probably the first set of books that really got me thinking about businesses and owning companies instead of being W-2'd and kind of really showed me the you know, I never really learned that in school.
You're right. The quadrant that you're referring to.
Quadrant.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly
when you explain the difference between your businesses. Absolutely.
Yeah. So then, you know, once you start thinking right, then you'll start making different moves to where, you know, I was like, man, I can be a realtor for $1,500. Take the test, have my licenses, and I can start my own company right there just by myself And that's kind of how I started it. And just from reading that Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and another good book is the 48 Laws of Power. I love that book.
You've mentioned this before. Yes, yes.
It's a hard read. It's thick. There's no, I mean, it's a, the words are small, but man, that's a great book just to kind of, it's a great sales book.
Yes.
I would definitely read that. And then there's another book called Pitch Anything. That's a good sales book, talks about frames and, you know, dealing with certain people. Everybody's different. So figuring out your customer and how to sell that type of personality or character traits will change the way you, it's more like a science to it instead of just shooting from the hip, you know, and
yeah, it sounds like it's most of it, you know, we get overwhelmed by it because you're thinking it is a science. There's some formulas. They always say if the numbers don't make sense, it's not a good deal. I'm sure that's something that you have to stay on point with. Do you feel with this time, as far as the last 20 years, that you've not only overcome some challenges, but do you feel you've also surrounded yourself with people that are more experienced than you, or have hopefully provide you some guidance? Or do you feel that this is something you're still learning on your own?
Yeah, no. I mean, when I first started, probably one of the big things I did was I got me a mentor, somebody who, and I paid for it. You know, I mean, it was through a Rich Dad, Poor Dad event where I paid for a mentor to kind of walk me through this first rehab deal and, you know, help me with that purchase. And I just got the low level stuff. Was, I don't know, it was like $3,000 or $5,000, which was a lot of money.
Right. Back then, yeah.
But you know, you gotta have people around you, advisors. So I've got two guys right now that, you know, they're older than me, they're wiser than me, they're super rich, and they've been there, done that. You know, I mean, one guy owns like 3,000 units of apartment buildings. I mean, so he's built them, he's developed them, he's got way more experience than I do. So I can always bounce things off of him, and I got two guys like that I talk to. But the biggest thing now is, like, now we've been doing this 20 years, so it's almost like the roles have now reversed. I mentor more people.
I was just going to say that.
The mentorship that I'm getting now.
I see you guys give a lot back. I mean, not just through mentorship, but the charities that you guys support and sponsor. And people are always constantly asking you for advice and questions. Obviously, you are always getting new clients because of that.
Yeah.
Do you feel it keeps you on your game, or it also allows you to explore any areas that you weren't thinking about before?
Yeah, I mean, like, so that's probably the newest company I started, was this education company. So I kind of tapped in with a company that provides real estate education, investing education, a high financial literacy concept type stuff. And I like their content. I like what they're about. So I kind of teamed up with them. And now that I have an education module, you know, I mean, now I can help people get educated. We can help them buy. We can help them sell. We can help them rehab. We can help them manage. We can help disposition. So there's so many avenues of services that our companies are continually adding to, you know. So I think that's key, is having multiple streams of income.
And you're teaching your children this too. You have three kids, and obviously you've also helped a lot of your own family members as well. Is there something that you want a child to learn that you maybe wish you would have learned as a child about money, about financial? What is it that you are trying to implement now?
So here's the biggest thing I want my kids to really understand at a young age. I feel like the quicker they know this, the more successful they'll be. But how to create systems and processes around something, around a new company. How do you create a system? What's the process? And figuring out how to create it, and then not only how to create it, but how to make it more efficient and how to make it faster. Always developing your systems and your processes on something to be better and faster, better and faster. That's what I feel like the customer wants, right? They want to come to a place. I figured out real quick that investors wanted to come to a one-stop shop. They wanted to come to a place that could help them buy, sell, fix, rehab, manage everything in one, you know, all of, instead of going out and finding five different people,
more
they
work,
come to one
right?
office and find everything they need. And I made it real simple for them. And that's where things kind of changed for us, you know, big time, because now we're managing assets for, now we're creating portfolios and managing portfolios for over 100 people, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. These are big investors that come in and buy, what, 20, 30 deals in one day.
Or hedge funds. We've got hedge funds as clients. We've got, I mean, so it's you know, we're managing some institutional assets. We're managing for the small mom and pop who owns one property.
Right.
I mean, so our customer ranges from, you know, but we do everything in volume. You know, I mean, every month I got 50, 60 people moving out. I got to get those homes ready. Every month we're buying 10, 20 new homes. I got to get, I mean, our construction pipeline's loaded with 50, 60 jobs every single month. You know, every day we get 15, 25 people calling in. My furnace ain't working. My toilet ain't working.
Yes. You know what I mean? The constant love, the great and the bad about exactly owning property.
It's taking a negative, right? Everybody thinks, you know what sucks? I don't want to be a landlord because I don't want to. But if you own the construction company and the calls come in, that's a whole way, a different way of looking at it.
Right.
You know, so when you're managing for yourself and you get all these problems that come in, it sucks. You know, like when I get a call and somebody, you know, my house froze and all the plumbing busts and it's on my house, I'm like, man, this sucks. You know, if it's on somebody else's house, if you own the company, that's business for the company, you know, so it's just a different way of looking at it and a different twist on things. And
that's excellent advice. And things that I feel like we're going to have to do another podcast with you, because I'm sure people are thinking, oh God, I have all these questions, not just from business point, maybe from investing to just starting a business or multiple businesses. I do want to leave with one question, a fun question. Can you remember the first thing that you bought for yourself as a luxury or fun when you knew you were doing well? Can you remember what that first purchase was?
So I was like, I don't know, 23, and we bought a 6,000 square foot house on a private golf course. Was probably that was a unique situation for us. You know, I mean, all our neighbors were like 50-year-olds, you know, you were really killing it if you were 40. And and me and my wife moved into this neighborhood. You know, we started building our house at 23. I think we moved in at 24. But that was probably when I started figuring out, man, something's unique. Something's different here.
Yeah.
Because when you're going through it, you don't really know. I always, like, I didn't know we were doing that well because I thought other people did that well.
But you were surrounding and you were smart enough to surround yourself with people that were doing it, but they weren't your age.
They weren't, right. But that like moving into a neighborhood like that, where now I go to the clubhouse and we're sitting here having drinks and eating dinner, and everybody who's in the clubhouse either owns a company, owns a business, is, you know, I mean, they're a doctor, they're a lawyer, they're a business owner, you know, so you just surround, like my whole network just changed from arena football to business, you know, and just who you hanging out with makes it. But if I didn't buy that house, I probably would have never been able to surround
yourself to that. Well, I think we're going to definitely have to do another follow-up, because I'm sure you have tons of lessons, experiences, mistakes, things that you've learned from. And obviously with this next coming year, a lot of people have that on their goal list or their bucket list to buy that house, buy that rental property. And so I'm sure they're going to want more information from you. What's the best way that people can contact you and your company?
So patgrace.com is a website that has pretty much, I mean, everything's on that website. They can look up Pat Grace on Facebook. All my contact info is at patgrace.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being with us, and I'm sure we're going to have to do a follow-up. And for any questions, please feel free to contact us, and we'll get back to you shortly.